everyone, and welcome to Better Done Than Perfect, a show for SaaS founders and product people. I'm your host, Jane Portman, and in this season, we talk about user onboarding with fellow founders and guest experts. Today, our awesome guest is Christina Quiñones, Head of Customer Experience at MeetEdgar, the software that you most likely know very well, and we're going to talk about user onboarding and the way they do it at MeetEdgar. This show is brought to you by UserList, the best way for SaaS founders to send onboarding emails, segment your users based on events, and see where your customers get stuck in the product. Start your free trial today at userlist.com. Hi, Christina.
Hi, Jane. Thank you so much for having me on. I'm glad to be here.
We're delighted. So you've been with the company for ages. Sounds like 7 years,
yes.
You've observed the whole evolution of user onboarding and everything. Tell us more how you got started at MeetEdgar and the story of the product.
Yeah. So for anyone who is already familiar with our product or might have followed Laura in the past, we actually weren't in software at all many years ago prior to our launching of MeetEdgar back in 2014. We were actually an educational company teaching social media marketing to small business owners. We saw there was a hole in the marketplace for a software that would allow us to execute the strategies that we ourselves were teaching. So we decided to build the product and MeetEdgar was born.
And how has the product evolved over those 7 years? Have you changed your, you know, product scope, the target audience?
So our target audience has always been small business owners. Of course, we're always going to get other types of customers trying the product and even, you know, able to adapt the product to their needs. But from 2014 all the way to now and going forward, our target definitely still remains at its core, a small business owner, solopreneurs, and you know, people with what I like to call micro businesses. So teams of like 10 or fewer people, or people basically doing it all on their own, maybe with a virtual assistant or two. That's really who we built the product for to begin with. And that is who we continue to try to optimize for. As far as the evolution of the product, aside from definitely lots of cosmetic, you know, UI, just visual changes, we've also worked on improving just how easy it is to use our product and be familiar with the bread and butter of what makes MeetEdgar unique. When we launched our product, we were the first one to basically allow for automated reuse of your content and what we like to call today upcycling of your content through the use of our schedule and the categorization system that Edgar has. So that's what we continue to build around and build Edgar from, is just ease of use around this idea that you can lean on categories and a preset schedule that lets you be present for your audience on social media while allowing you to basically batch your work. And Edgar is what makes it easy to do that and makes it so that you can, you know, focus on other parts of your business, as a lot of small business owners have just, you know, limited amounts of time, but lots of hats to wear.
Give us an idea of what your team is like and what's your own personal role as head of customer experience these days with the product.
Yeah, so right now we are at about 11, I believe. We do work with contractors as well, and we've introduced some new people to our team, but we have our team of developers that happens to be our largest team at the company. We have our operations team, so dealing with finance and human resources and you know, just overall making sure our team is taken care of. On our CX marketing team, there are four of us at the moment. There's myself, and I am just in charge of not just the vision, but making sure that our projects are executed, making sure that amongst the advocate team, our feedback and our viewpoints and our strategies are heard at the top level of the company and as we work to drive the company forward. And then we have Megan, who is our onboarding specialist. I will be talking more about how her role plays a big part in the initial Edgar experience for a customer. And we also have Maura and Tia, who execute the vast majority of our marketing work at the team. At Edgar, our CX and marketing teams work really closely together because we want to make sure that our customers have an extremely cohesive experience from the moment they're introduced to our brand to when they're actively using our app and seeing Edgar post for them on their various social media accounts. So because of that, we work very, very closely. Our campaigns are more often than not in tandem, done in tandem to make sure that what we're offering our potential customers and what our audience is seeing matches up with what they're going to actually experience when they're in our app, whether for a trial or they're already a paying customer.
I think this is like a dream setup of customer experience and marketing working together and approaching every campaign as a duo of your work. That's really pretty unique because we've had a few conversations here before. And Ellie Blum, for example, being deeply frustrated that it's all about the chairs you sit on, not about the areas of, you know, the product that you collaborate on. And I can see that you've really solved this problem very well.
Well, I mean, I will say that this, it wasn't always this way. Part of the reason why our team has evolved to CX and marketing specifically, how our team has evolved to work in this fashion is actually for two reasons. One, we're a really small team. We do need to, I don't want to say step on toes, but not be afraid to step on toes, basically, because you have to be able to, you know, If your talents match with what we need in a different part of the company, then that might be something that we need to adjust your role for whether that's like temporarily or for the foreseeable future. CX and marketing is close enough that we and our team's small enough that we've been able to do that fairly smoothly. But yeah, like I said, it hasn't always been like that. We've sort of grown to find that. So like I said, one of the reasons why is because we are a small company. The second reason why is because we've found that with the skill set that we do have on our team, it just, the work flows a lot more easily this way. We are able to get more stuff done. And with the added benefit of those things that we do get done, they're a lot more in alignment than if we were treating each team at this company, at least of this size, as two discrete entities. So that's, you know, it works for us. And I can see how with a larger team, it might be a little bit more difficult with a lot of, you know, cooks in the kitchen. But for any small teams out there, I highly recommend experimenting with diving into cross collaboration and really, really embracing that and seeing where people's skills can take them, where their skills can take the company.
Let's talk about the roadblocks that you can see, especially from the height of your experience that your customers experience when they sign up. So your product is one of those when it's not like they can click and start going. Definitely. They have to create their library of content before that they have to integrate their social media accounts and things like that. So what are the biggest challenges?
Yes, yes. Well, it's exactly that. There's a lot of front loading of work that has to be done before Edgar can actually do anything for you. That's definitely been our largest roadblock, our biggest head scratcher still now is how to get somebody from, okay, yes, I have signed up for an account to, all right, I can see the outcome. I can see where this is going to take me and really get that aha moment in less than the 12 hours that we've found people take to make their decision. So that's something that we're constantly working on and constantly thinking about how we can improve the in-app onboarding experience for is just getting people to see what their outcome is, or at the very least, what it will look like really quickly, really just within that first session. And it is very difficult for us because of how much work is involved in getting set up, primarily because with our target audience, with small business owners, you know, we do have a lot of people who are fairly technically savvy. So it's no issue to them to connect an RSS feed, maybe hook up our Zapier integration, or maybe they already have everything set up in a CSV file from their VA, or maybe they've done it before. And it's easy for them to get onboarded. But there are also a lot of our customers who aren't. The main outcome that we promise to our customers that a lot of our customers come to us to is that Edgar will save them time on social and help them spend more time engaging and creating rather than babysitting social media. Because of the work that is required to get Edgar to that state up front, it can be difficult sometimes for some folks to immediately see the value of Edgar, especially if we've caught them. Honestly, some of it is timing. If we've caught them at the wrong time, maybe they signed up, but they really don't have that hour or two to dedicate to getting Edgar filled with content so they can see what's going to go out, at least, even if they don't start posting immediately. You know, that's a challenge that we do recognize and that we're working on still and will probably be working on forever as we make additional changes to the product.
I'm really delighted that I have an opportunity to ask the following couple questions to you because you've been observing the problem at scale. And this is the problem we struggle at Userless as well. That is the internal motivation of the user and their ability to, you know, put in a couple hours of work to get your product going. And as a product owner, you don't always have that opportunity to affect that. And how do you even sleep well knowing that some people just were not inspired and motivated enough to get this going? And I would really, really appreciate your insights there as an experienced and seasoned manager.
Yeah, I mean, I am definitely of the mind that if you've done everything in your power that you know of to be able to capture your customers' interest and get them engaged, then that's really all you can do. Because at the end of the day, people are gonna make their choices, and you can then use your data to make decisions on what you might change. But, you know, that's all you can do. And I just see it as an ever evolving experience. So one of the things that we make sure we do all the time, and this is one of the trickier ones to track, although we do try, is we make sure that we're always available for just monthly workshops and daily, near daily office hours for our customers. And then that way we are able to give people more opportunities to reach out to us and to connect with us and stay engaged, particularly during that really crucial first few days, first few hours. Just let them know that there's somebody there to help them if they do have any questions. We're not always going to catch everyone with that, but anecdotally, we have found that just being available to our customers has helped with that. And so aside from making improvements to the actual product experience and maybe adding some finesse to some of our features, that's really, I think, the best thing that we can do, knowing that our product is, you know, can be a little bit difficult or time consuming to get into, or at least a customer might feel that way if they've never actually used our product before. Just making sure that we let them know that we are available to them and that we are there to help them does make a difference, as far as I can tell from the customer feedback we've received.
One thing I'd like to highlight here is those workshops that you run. And I recall these are like, let's get together for a couple hours and work in real time. And is that it? How does it work?
Yes. So we call them content batching parties. And my lovely colleague, Megan, who I mentioned a bit earlier, she is actually the one who runs them. We usually do them once a month, though sometimes we do them more often. And sometimes we'll have other workshops running as well. But basically, the point of a content batching workshop is there will be a little bit of a lesson. And then throughout the entire call, there's opportunities for Q&A and just asking questions about Edgar or perhaps asking about your strategy. But we usually do tie it to a specific theme or lesson. And then we help people just get motivated, stay motivated, and get the information they need to be able to do that actual front loading of work. So some people like to do it monthly, some people like to do it weekly, but that batching of content that really makes Edgar shine for a small business owner, we provide a space for that with those content batching parties and help people learn that strategy and acclimate themselves to the act of batching their social media content. So that's something that we've been doing for a while. And we do have a lot of customers that come month after month. And it appears to be something that people look forward to because it helps them stay accountable to their social media marketing. And it helps them keep engaged in the product, which is a bonus for us, of course.
What's the attendance? Do you get to actually hang out with all these people, or is it mostly like synchronously getting together to work, but you don't really talk too much?
Oh, no, the chat can be pretty chatty. So we run those through Demio. So Megan will present, and then either myself but usually one of my other colleagues is in the chat. So we'll pull questions from the chat or answer them directly in there. But the folks who attend, they are usually very engaged in the chat, chatting with each other or asking us questions. There's a lot of engagement that goes on, and it's not just head down. There's a lot of opportunity there for, you know, questions and answer time, or just asking about social media strategy, for example.
I'm so glad to hear that it works for you. We've done something along these lines at UserList with our monthly happy hours, but we've kept that strictly away from work. So it's like a monthly hangout of peers, and we just discuss general SaaS matters. Mm-hmm. But here, I'm really glad to hear that it has worked out as a productive hack for you and your guests.
Yeah, you know, we did try that on Twitter in the past, and we did like it. It's just that it was one of those things that, you know, with a small team, it was one of those things that we did have to end up just putting on the chopping block just because of bandwidth, basically. But yeah, that's definitely the type of activity that we like to do to stay in touch with and engaged with our audience.
There are a couple more things that you're doing that I'd love to dive into. And one is having a dedicated onboarding specialist, Megan, that you mentioned.
Yes.
And another one is the length of your trial that you just lately changed to being just 7 days. Mm-hmm. So please answer those two in any no particular order.
Yeah. So Megan came to us a few years ago. She's also been with the company a while. I think it's been like 4 or 5 years at this point. When Megan came to us, she came on as a customer service rep. Now, as I've sort of alluded to or mentioned, we do wear multiple hats here at the company. So eventually her role evolved to not just be, you know, that of someone who's answering support tickets or troubleshooting, but someone who is part of the face of our brand. And Megan has been creating video content for us for a while. So she also does live streams for us fairly daily, and she runs those workshops with our customers. A lot of our emails will also come from Megan. So one of the things that's been sort of built around Megan and her body of work as an onboarding specialist, that she's kind of like our customer's first friend when they're signing up for the product. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the first friend concept, but we do that here at the company, where when we onboard a new team member, they'll have their first friend. And that's basically the person that they go to with any questions, with any concerns, or they aren't sure who to turn to about something. That's going to be the person that they turn to. So that's kind of what Megan's role is as onboarding specialist. She is not just the face of customer support, of customer experience for our users. She's the one who's going to be their first friend that guides them through their experience in the app. And how that actually works out in reality is that she's the one who people are going to see in most of our educational video content. She is going to be the one they send their questions to if they go to our daily office hours. And she is going to be the one leading the workshop they attend if a customer chooses to attend one of our content batching workshops or one of our educational webinars, for example.
I have a couple questions, and you might as well ignore answering them because they're sort of sensitive. So one is, you as the head of CX, being with the company longer, didn't put that role on yourself. And then second one is, isn't it scary to sort of invest into one phase being the, you know, the forefront of your customer success in this way? And what if Megan is on sick leave or, you know, goes on maternity or something like that? What are you going to do?
So yeah, I mean, when Megan first started, there was really a lot of experimentation there for us. Like we went from, hey, maybe record some of these demo videos, or would you be willing to re-record some of this video content we have, to, hey, Megan, we know that you are growing your skill in this particular area, and we've found that you are naturally skilled at it, or you are seeing some improvement here. Let's build out your body of work to include this type of content. And I do see that the evolution of that role as something that was natural and necessary, given the skills that she brings to the table. I mean, I just got to say, if Megan, if you're listening to this, amazing at the work that she does. And I think that with the company that we have now and where she is, what she'd like to do, and how my role and other people's roles at the company currently work, it works out very well. And I'm incredibly happy with that. As far as feeling like we're investing in someone being, the singular face of the company, I think that is one of those things that we just can't get tied to. And we just have to be aware that we may run the risk of, things might change, and it might, these tasks or these projects might fall to someone in the future. But that, I think, is, part of the evolution of a brand, of a company. So I don't necessarily see that to be risky, because it's not necessarily the same as, like, now we have a brand new logo, and maybe it won't be an octopus, but like a bird, so because of that, I kind of see that more of, like I mentioned, the natural evolution of a brand or the company, and, also the individual contributor, like their career. So it doesn't scare me, because I feel like if the change happens, we just have to roll with it and make the changes we need necessary to keep going, or change course if needed. So when we went to the 7-day trial, that was after literally years of having a no trial sign up flow with a coupon that anyone could get. You could get it. We could get it by entering your email address, or like literally just searching somewhere. There would always be a 1 month coupon code, just because of how the industry has changed and what customers are actually expecting up front. We decided to then, earlier in 2020, experiment more with just having a free trial and no code. We initially had it to 30 days, and then we dropped it down to 14 days. And then we decided, because we saw in Mixpanel, which is the primary tracking app that we use, we saw in Mixpanel that most people took the actions or made the decision to cancel, like, within their trial, within the first 7 days, and really within the first 12 hours. So because of that, we decided to just cut down the trial from, again, we started out, we played around with 30 days and 14 days, and we said, hey, all the activity is happening within those first 7 days, let's make it 7 days. Now, even more crucial within the 7 days is that 12-hour time frame. But that's something that we are also working on with improved onboarding, and looking at how we can optimize our email sequences for, like, actual open. If we've lost somebody, if they're no longer in their app session, we've lost them, they're checking their email and seeing how we can get them back. But that's basically it. The numbers told us that all the activity was happening within the first week. And that's why we switched to a 7-day trial instead of having the full 30.
Well, I'm really impressed to hear that you spent a while without having any trial at all.
Yeah.
I thought you had 30 days for a while and then decided to cut it. But yeah, no, that's a different story. So what are the results? You've been running this for a few months by now.
This one is a difficult one to answer, because 2020 has been an interesting year.
Oh, yeah.
I'd like to say that because of the 7-day trial, we've probably been able to keep our trial acquisition up or flat most months since we started it. Where I don't know that would be the case if we didn't have the free trial. Again, it's kind of difficult to say just because of how this year has gone. Like many companies, we saw a dip back in April, and then it steadily went back up. But we made that decision to just remove a barrier. It was we felt that it was time, and so we tested it. And unfortunately, the baseline is no longer the baseline, and I'm not sure that I could answer that with confidence. Honestly, it's still one of those things. That is one of those things that still is a question mark in my own head.
Which takes me sort of one level up. And the question is that when it comes to changes like that in the product, like because, you know, the dynamics of the trial, credit card or no credit card, these are some giant decisions. They affect a lot in the dynamics. How do you approach these changes? Do you have a certain framework for running them as an experiment? Or is it like, we change it for good, we don't have any period, we reevaluate this, and et cetera, et cetera?
This is also an interesting question because it's definitely something that we've played around with different frameworks. In this case, just the way that our billing works, it wasn't too much of a pain to switch back and forth because our actual in-app onboarding didn't change. It was really just the billing portion of it, just with the way that Edgar is currently. So because of that, we did approach it initially as okay, let's switch it. We'll run it for, we'll say, 1 month. But if, you know, if we hit a certain threshold, we can always switch it back. And that's sort of how we approached it this time. We didn't do a traditional test per se, where we were like splitting the traffic from one to the other. We did just switch it for everybody. Although the time frame that we'd committed to was, you know, it was about 1 to 2 months, and with a change, with the understanding that we'd be open to changing things back if the numbers told us we needed to.
But apparently things worked out fine and you kind of extended the experiment, or is it not an experiment anymore?
So it's not an experiment anymore, and that's because on like the sort of like zoomed in level, week over week, we didn't see a material difference. Mm-hmm. As far as like the actual signups are concerned. Now, again, it's odd because because of what this year is and our previous flow, it wasn't a trial, but also most people signed up with a coupon that gave them a free month. So it was effectively a trial, just like a different way of getting to it. So we could really only focus on one point when we were evaluating the efficiency of the trial process, and that was whether or not we got people to sign up at all. And those numbers didn't deviate much. If I recall correctly, we did see a little bit of a bump, a significant little bump in trial signups immediately upon release, and then it sort of normalized. And overall, it's been pretty steady, but nothing earth-shatteringly different as compared to the flow from before. The only difference is now we have removed barrier to entry for potential users.
What's your general feeling for SaaS founders and product people who are listening to us? Is it the requirement these days to have a free trial in your product? And is it a requirement to have it without a credit card? Because it feels like the industry has become more generous on that front. For example, we still have a card up front at UserList, but like we're being tested every day with our mentor questions and everything. Like, why do we still have it? Because we should remove friction, like as a mantra. Do you also confirm that?
Yes, and I will say that that's definitely how we've been moving towards. Now, we do still require a credit card up front, but, you know, like we've been talking about, we move from not having a trial at all or not having a traditional trial at all to now having a trial for all signups. Now, I do think, yeah, I mean, at this point, the industry has evolved enough and there are enough competitors for nearly any tool out there that having a product that you're trying to sell to a new audience and actually getting signups, you are probably going to need a free trial. I'm kind of up in the air about whether or not a credit card is required there. Some days I feel like we should remove that. Some days I'm like, no, I think that's reasonable, but that might change. I do think that just with the number of, again, competitors that pop up every few months for all sorts of tools, a free trial and probably no credit card required is going to be the absolute norm no questions asked within the next few years. People like to try it before you buy it, and it's easier than ever to build an app. Not saying it's easy, but it's easier than ever to build an app or assemble a team to build you an app. And the hard part is going to be marketing it. And what's the easiest way to get someone to try a product though, usually? Just, hey, no strings attached. Just give us a try. It's not going to cost you a dime. And I do think that removing even though a trial doesn't cost you anything, removing the potential risk that gets flagged in a potential customer's mind when they do see a credit card is required, that's just going to be more and more the norm for potential customers.
I'm going to quote the numbers that every SaaS consultant is, they pretty much say the same. And the practice also shows that removing the credit card typically increases the trials by 3x, 4x. You're going to see that kind of increase in numbers. Of course, you're going to see a similar decrease in the conversion rate. Right. So it just overall changes the dynamics of everything.
Right.
It's a pretty big decision.
Yeah, I agree. And that is definitely one of the things that we've talked about. Like, it's having four times more trials isn't necessarily going to translate into any MRR at all. So that's definitely one of the things that we keep in mind, is that, you know, it's not a magic bullet. It's just another strategy, and you still have to account for all the things that lead to that customer's decision.
Over the years, were there any, with all the experiments and improvements that you've made, were there any big discoveries that really surprised you?
Big discoveries that surprised me. I'm sorry. I have to think about this for a second.
You're hard to surprise.
I mean, honestly, I think that's one of the things with being at a company for so long. Like, you have to really make a practice of it to separate yourself from your experience, from your time at the company, to try to be able to see the product from a more objective point of view, you know, when you need to, which I think is why this question is making me think a little bit. You know what I think has surprised me is how many small agencies or mid-sized agencies, even social media marketing consultancies, how many of them will use our product and make it work for them on behalf of clients. And like I mentioned, we are built for small business owners, which it means that it's really not optimized for using for client brands, for example, or with multiple team members, but our customers make it happen. So over the years, we've definitely seen the need to make, honestly, concessions in some cases, and make some things more easy to use for people who are using multiple brands, or people who might want a way to collaborate a bit better or edit their content in an easier, quicker way. So that, I think, is something that's been a bit surprising, is how we've had a pretty steady flow of customers who aren't necessarily our target customer, but they stick with us and they keep coming to try us because the product itself still fulfills what they need. It's just, you know, maybe not the most perfect solution for them, but they make it work. I mean, I bring that up because it is one of those situations where, you know, those customers are still customers. So their feedback can be both good and bad, in that it can help us open our eyes to other avenues that we maybe were closed off to. At the same time, we do have to be mindful of how close or far that's taking us from our core target focus, which is just in general solopreneurs and small business owners.
Yeah, I think everybody says, like, in order to be successful, you've got to like focus deep and like cut off everybody who's not a good fit, right? But you've had a number of loyal customers
right. Who
aren't a good fit, and that's fine.
Yeah, yeah.
Like many things in life.
Yeah, so that's just surprised me. It can be really, you know, it can be really distracting to say, no, it has to be this way because it has to be for this customer. But there are always going to be gray areas. There are always going to be people who see value in a part of your product and are willing to make concessions to how they use it, perhaps, or willing to adapt their own behaviors and workflows to make the product work for them. So it's a delicate balance to see, like, okay, well, how can we improve this experience for this cohort of people as well, while making sure that we're not distracted from the core focus of the product and end up inadvertently causing bloat that didn't need to be there. So yeah, I mean, it's a balance, I guess.
If you had an opportunity to start the product journey from scratch, what would you do differently when it comes to user onboarding?
Initially, when we first launched Edgar, we were the first product to use the categories and the automatic recurring schedule. So our onboarding was very, very, very heavily focused on how to use a specific feature. If I had to start over again, then I would heavily advocate for more of an outcome-based experience. It seems so elementary looking back, like, oh, we could have just done that. But really, you know, when your elbows deep in the work, it's not always as easy. You're like, well, we're teaching them a new thing. We have to make sure they know how to do this very specific thing exactly. And that, I think, was, it just felt like the most natural approach to us, because we did sort of create a new segment within the social media marketing tool segment. So it made sense to us at the time. However, in hindsight, more focus on the individual user wins and their outcomes, like giving them a clearer peek of what their outcomes are during the onboarding process or during their first session with the app, I think that would be the thing that I would change if I could go back in time.
What does that translate to when it comes to actually doing things? What kind of insights would you like to instill in your customers' minds related to outcomes with the example of Meet Edgar as a product?
Yeah, so this is an ongoing conversation that we're actually having at the company. Like, you can't show somebody how well their post is going to do or how big their audience will be after posting with Edgar for however many months, right? Like, that is the future, and we cannot predict the future. However, one of the things that and this is my personal vision, my view of like what it looked like inside the app. In my perfect vision of what that looks like for a person, a first win is seeing how beautiful and on brand your post looks, the post that you've just created, how that looks in your library, and seeing after, you know, 5 minutes of onboarding tops, you see an entire week's worth or 2 weeks worth of content there. You think it looks beautiful, and you feel confident in what you're going to see on social media. I think that we have achieved that to an extent within the product, and we also have shout out to our designer Kevin, because he's got some beautiful new updates to the UI in store for us in the next few months. So we've definitely done that to an extent. However, the thing is, we are still transitioning from a highly feature focused experience to an outcome focused experience, I guess. I can't think of another word for that. I don't know if that's still a little too sort of like unclear there, but I mean, the outcome that I like for our customers to have upon completing onboarding, and this is whether or not they decide that Edgar's the right tool for them now, is that I want them to feel confident that their posts that go through Edgar represent them and their brand and will go out when they need it to, when they want it to, when they want to reach their audiences. And I think that's the bottom line, is confidence in the outcomes that they can achieve with us.
We could probably talk about that for another couple hours, because that's so interesting about how you really bring it to life. As we're wrapping up this episode, though, can you give us two ultimate tips for those people listening to us? One do and one don't about user onboarding.
Yeah, I'll start with the don't. Don't just tell your customers. Don't just tell your users how to use the product. Not in onboarding, because there's always a place for that, right? Your help docs or, you know, a strategically placed tooltip or something. There's always a place for telling people how to do something. What you do want to do is give them a taste, or show them if you can, give them a taste of what things are going to look like, how their life or their workflow, whatever it is your product is for, how will their situation be made better as a result of using your product? Really think of that. There's always going to be a place for the feature specific how-tos. Again, in my opinion, that is your help docs. That is your tooltips. But when it comes to onboarding, so in-app onboarding, your onboarding emails, that's your chance to really connect with and engage with your customer. Give them a taste of the outcome. Give them a peek at what their life could look like, how it could be better with the use of your product. I mean, because that's what we're building, right? We're building solutions. What does your solution look like for them? What could it look like for them? And make sure you're really highly focused on that. Don't forget the how-tos, but just remember, that's not what gets people emotionally invested in the experience. And if that's what you're going for in your onboarding, and you know, a lot of us are competing on so many levels with so many other tools, unfortunately, that's part of what we need to do, is we need to connect with them on a different level. And that's what I would say. Do show them the outcomes. Do show them how their life could be better with your tool.
That's wonderful advice. Thanks so much. Where can people find you and your product online?
Yeah, so you can find us on social at Meet Edgar across all the platforms. So Twitter, Facebook, Pinterest, LinkedIn, we're just at Meet Edgar. You can find us at meetedgar.com, and you can sign up for our free 7-day trial if you just head there and click on Try Edgar Free at the top. If you want to connect on Twitter, you can find me at Christina Q. That's KristinaQ.
Fantastic. Well, really appreciate you sharing your wisdom with us today. And thanks so much for inspiring our listeners to improve their own onboarding.
Thank you so much, Jane. I appreciate it. Thank you so much for having me.
Wonderful. And have a great rest of the week.
You too.
Thanks for listening. If you found the episode useful, please spread the word about this new show on Twitter, mentioning UserList, or leave us a review on iTunes.